For August 23rd, 2013, we talk about the Gamescom announcements, Grand Theft Auto V pre-release junk, and miscellaneous games. Welcome to the 31st level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
My name's Ben Merkel. Where's Dennis?
Oh, he's got to go last, but we waited the requisite amount of time.
As if he was there.
Yes.
But not.
Dennis had prior engagements, which we understand. You're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games.
And Dennis.
And Dennis. It's a Dennis appreciation podcast. Oh, man, we got some stuff in store for you. It's been a little bit since the three of us have been on a podcast together. You know, last week we did the Last of Us podcast, and it's back to business as usual here. Going to do a little bit of the brief, a little bit of the grind. I forgot to do a multiplayer. Oh, well, it'll be a short episode. So, sorry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I told Dennis this. I'm actually being really, really meta with the whole Last of Us thing, because, you know, my goal is to be the last of us to play the game.
The last of us in the group, because you technically are.
Right, yeah, now. Yeah. So, okay. So, you know, I totally did that on purpose. You
which
know?
Means you could start playing at any time between now and infinity, and you would still be
the last of us to play.
Do you guys just want to go? You just want to.
Yeah, let's just not make jokes anymore, guys.
Steal it from Dennis and Infinity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't let Dennis ever get near anything of yours.
You just have to outdrink him and out be at his place.
Yes. Out be at his place him.
Yeah.
It is time for The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world as pertains video games, or maybe not. Who knows? I don't know. Let's see here. I've got one that just happened today, and by today I mean the day we record this, and by today I mean Tuesday. So, Gamescom, which is a thing that happens over in Germany. Is it Cologne? Do they pronounce it Cologne, or is it something weird?
Cologne.
Cologne?
Lagna.
Yes.
It's spelled K-O-L-N, and if you're German,
okay,
it has
so,
umlaut, too.
So over in Köln, they're having, I think it's the biggest video game event in the world, Gamescom now. It's definitely bigger than E3 in terms of attendance, because you get all of Europe over there. They've got a bunch of gamesmen. And today's...
And women.
Yes, by which I mean everything. It's the royal men. Writing down a title. All right, I need to do that and then not draw attention to the fact that I'm writing down a title. So there may be more stuff that has come out from the event. You know, in the meantime, so, you know, between when we record this and when you hear it, we're sorry about that. We'll cover it next week or the next time we record. But the big stuff today: Sony had their events and they revealed a couple of key pieces of information. The first is the PS4 has a launch date, November the 15th in North America and November the 29th in Europe.
That's the day after my birthday.
That it is.
Hint,
that's
hint. Hint. Listeners.
If you want to steal his identity.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah. I think you need more than that.
Okay.
But over the course of how many hours of audio, like, you're done.
I do give like a digit of my social security every episode, so they could probably piece it together.
I can't even be sure that you're you. So
I'm probably a robot.
Probably.
I like Metal Gear Solid, so you know.
So that makes you a robot?
Yeah. No. I like the second one the best. We'll say that.
Okay, that makes you a robot.
No, I think that's good. I like the second one. I think it's underrated. Three's good, though.
I'm just saying that for the purpose of this joke. Three is clearly the best one.
Three's clearly the best one. I actually really like two, but that's neither here nor there. I feel weird. Every time I express an opinion, somebody immediately comes out and disagrees with it. So,
I'm sorry that you're wrong, Cole.
But yeah, November 15th, that's roundabouts when everybody expected. That's, you know, peak Call of Duty time, you know?
Got to get that cod on.
Oh, yeah. Got to put some cod on that grill. And by grill, I mean the horrible gaping maw at the back of this machine. Oh, man. So, related to that, launch window titles for the system have been announced, including, some kind of current gen stuff that, people are kind of just expecting to see. Battlefield 4, Call of Duty Ghosts, a Lego game, Madden. It's just all the stuff you'd expect. The big titles and the ones that are kind of interesting to me, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag is coming out. Watch Dogs is going to be on there. And
nice. Do you have some dates for when those are coming out?
No. These are launch window, which I take to mean either launch day or, sometime.
Between then and Christmas.
Between then and Christmas. They've pulled some hijinks with this, too, where it's been like, January is technically considered a launch window. Like, this stuff is going to, solidify real quick. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So there's that. Additionally, from Sony, they announced they're dropping the price on the PS Vita, $50. People were expecting a new version of that hardware, but that is not the case. They're just making it cheaper.
Hmm.
Yeah. So a bunch of Sony stuff. Anything interesting in there, guys?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I should probably decide that before I say it on the show, but I just want to know if there are any responses. I'm not too terribly surprised by anything of what I'm seeing.
I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, I think it's seldom that like from Xbox or PS3 where like a launch game is like really, really good. Halo, I guess, is a counter example, but like, I don't know.
Halo wasn't a launch game.
Yeah, it just came out early, I guess. Wait, no, Halo, the original Combat Evolved, did not come out with the Xbox?
I don't believe that it did. I definitely know.
No, it wasn't a launch game. It was just when the platform became worthwhile.
Yeah.
Kind of? Yeah, I think that is. Now I'm real curious because I want to make sure that I'm not wrong about this. November 15th, 2001, and then the original Xbox. I'm going to be really upset. Oh, yeah, November 15th. Oh, boy, 12 years later, you guys. 12 years after the Xbox One, the PlayStation 4. Coincidence?
You're so
I think
old,
not.
Cole.
But we're all, like...
What are you talking about? I'm so young.
So I'm just kidding. We are all decreasing in relevance every single day of our lives. Don't worry. So... Yes.
Yeah, I know.
This podcast is getting dark really quick.
Sorry. Go ahead, David.
We're all just dust anyway.
I know. Like, of most of those, like, I know Watch Dogs is really the only one of those I'm interested in. I know Assassin's Creed, maybe, it seems like those games are kind of hit or miss.
I'm excited about Assassin's Creed 4 just because of the pirate ship stuff. But yeah, Watch Dogs is kind of the only next generation game on that list to me. So.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
The two games I'm really excited for that I've seen, like, announced are the new Bungie game and the, what is it? The people who made Call of Duty, their new game.
Titanfall?
Yeah, Yeah.
So who has another one?
I could go. Let me send a link to you guys so we can all take part in this. Basically, I've just been getting more and more excited about Grand Theft Auto V over the recent weeks, but they released a multiplayer video for it this last week, and some of the details on what the multiplayer is like. And it basically seems like it's similar to San Andreas as far as upgrade system, but it's a separate character than the story missions.
Oh, wow.
So you basically just create your own character. It's almost like Little Big Planet meets Grand Theft Auto World. So you can just make your own missions, like as far as heists go. You can invite your friends to do it. There might even be gangs that you can join. I can't recall the details of that. But... yeah, pretty much everything you do in the multiplayer gives you experience, gives you money, and then you use that to buy whatever you want in the world. So you can buy, like, a garage in the world, start a gang, and then all you guys have nice cars if you buy cars and stuff.
That
and
actually, so basically,
Yeah.
That sounds really, really cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. It sounds like they're kind of leveraging... I don't know, like, did you guys play any of the multiplayer from, what is it, 4?
Yeah, yeah.
Briefly, yeah.
It seemed like that one, like, the gameplay itself was a lot of fun. They just didn't really do much with it.
Yeah, they were, like, isolated experiences, essentially.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas this seems like if they took the multiplayer and were like, hey, let's make the multiplayer actually seem like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, it seems like as if everybody were playing San Andreas concurrently. It seems like that's kind of what the multiplayer is like.
Mm-hmm.
But then they add like a mission creator with it too, so that's pretty nice. But
yeah. I love the idea of, like, you know, especially of the interiors of buildings, like, you know, banks or whatever are modeled and accessible. Like, just the mm-hmm. idea that you can say, like, okay, it is our job to get this thing that is in this hard to reach place. And if they populate the area with any kind of AI, like if you can do co-op or horde mode kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like based on objectives that one person defines, or, you know, you can pull in, stuff around there. Infamous 2 kind of did that too, actually. In terms of, you know, letting you easily put in game logic and things like that. So I'd be curious about how granular they will let you be. But I think it's real smart of them to tie multiplayer progress to single player progress.
That's the thing. I'm not sure if I think they might be two separate tracks.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, you know, like, yeah. I think they might be independent, or at least that's what it looks like. But
okay,
you can do races with it though too.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at them dropping waypoints on there as well, and the races are always fun in those games. Man, I've not seen anything, like, aside from the initial trailer for Grand Theft Auto V. I've not seen anything about this game. So some of the stuff that I'm seeing here, I'm seeing it for the first time, and it's exciting me.
Dude, the map looks so beautiful. Yeah. I'm excited about it too. Yeah.
Well, that,
which city is it?
It's basically LA.
Los Santos. Like that lighthouse. I think I saw something that looks like the Hearst Mansion in here. Crazy. Yeah, it looks really good. Like that, and you know, Saints Row the Fourth came out today as well.
Yeah,
it did, and like,
and it's apparently amazing.
What am I doing talking to you guys?
Yeah, I know,
why am I
right?
Not playing
that? Well, so that led to me kind of thinking that there's like a is there a windstorm happening on somebody? Oh, you're watching a video. Okay, no, but like the Steam, like, you know, so and so is now playing message is the best advertisement that any game could ever get.
Oh yeah.
So this, like this, I noticed this really big with Rogue Legacy, but today, you know, I work on my personal PC, so I work with Steam open in the background, you know, just as you do, and like in the middle of the day, I'm seeing, you know, blah 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 is playing Saints Row the Fourth. I'll get back to writing this email.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Like, Saints Row the Fourth come out, Payday 2 has come out.
Them open world games.
Yeah.
They like to come out in August and September.
True dat. So I'm curious about this Grand Theft Auto 5 thing, this new business. I think this Grand Theft Auto thing is going to catch on, you guys.
I really think they'll get it this time.
I think they're going to land it. I think they're going to stick this one. I got faith in these kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a young ragtag team of developers.
Yeah. Oh, man. They got nothing to lose and everything to prove. David, you got a brief?
I, again, do not have a brief.
Okay.
However, I, again, have one I made up.
Okay. It's funnier if you don't say you made it up.
Pro tip. So I was reading an article today. Apparently there's a game console that was being developed domestically for the North Korean market. The console was going to be called the Xbox Un. And, you know, it was personally commissioned by, you know, President Kim Jong-un, declared that the youth of the North Korea, you know, must be able to prepare against the, you know, oncoming Zerg invasion or whatever. So I mean, you know, it's got a number of ideas, you know, trying to address concerns that parents may have about harassment or bullying by, you know, just monitoring all online play and, you know, any, you know, subversive behavior will be reported to the nearest, you know, secret police. You know, the launch towers appear to mainly be, you know, communistic versions of popular existing titles. So they've got, you know, Vladimir Putin's Punch-Out, Minesweeper DMZ Edition,
ooh,
Starving Mama.
Jesus.
Sorry, too much?
This podcast is getting really dark.
Yeah.
In the first half of Homefront.
That's a deep cut right there.
seriously, though, Putin does need his own video game.
If only to like spread the myths that he likes to that he likes for people to believe about him.
Yeah, I'm just saying he needs to Kickstarter that.
He needs to start a movie with Matthew McConaughey. Shirts off the entire time.
Oh man, sitting on the floor playing bongos, doing push-ups while you talk to him. Yeah.
But unfortunately, it appears the console has recently been canceled. According to a government source, they said that when we realized that Microsoft's Xbox One would include surveillance technology, discourage independent entrepreneurship, and eliminate private ownership of games, we realized that there's just no need to develop a communistic video game system.
Rimshot.
Man, that's not a burden. That's a firebombing.
Nice, dude.
Yeah. Good work.
Good on you.
Good to see you. The problem is, I made this up a long time ago before Xbox like stepped back everything. It's like, oh no, it's becoming less and less topical.
we have to pull the ripcord on it right now. Deploy this thing. Oh, there's one final mini one that I would like to say.
Sure.
Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, has a release date now.
When is that?
September the 20th. And I've already pre-ordered my copy on Steam.
What year?
Of 2013.
Okay.
I know. You're right to doubt. Don't worry. You're right to doubt.
I don't know. Announcing a game a month before it comes out seems a short window.
They're not announcing it. It's been announced. They just have. It's been delayed 17 times. Yes.
See, I like to imagine that this game is just like the new version of The Incredible Machine, starring like slightly forgetful pigs.
Yeah, I wish that it was possible to get a hold of The Incredible Machine still.
But what is the
apparently
Incredible
it's
Machine?
Not. So it was a kind of like an edutainment kind of game where you made a bunch of like Rube Goldberg devices in order to accomplish a task.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking at GOG right now, and the Incredible Machine Mega Pack is a thing. So I am full of shit. Carry on. Oh, it doesn't work on anything except Windows XP and Vista. So my point stands.
Yeah, that's really weird. Oh, yeah. because Windows 7, yeah.
Because Windows 7 dot dot dot.
Yeah.
I don't
Windows 7, I don't know, they eliminated I don't know, maybe they just never updated the store page, but I know they eliminated a lot of the like weird like legacy code. And so a whole bunch of like old games won't run on Windows 7.
Hmm. And I thought that was a thing that Windows 7 was like good at, was running stuff backward compatible, or you know.
Well, like I know, and this one probably doesn't apply to this, but like it's the first, at least mainstream Windows release that doesn't support DOS.
Hmm. Well, there's DOSBox.
Yeah. So, like, I do install a freaking DOS box to play Colossal Cave Adventure. But
Yeah. No. So the guys over at Video Games Hot Dog, or one of them, Zach, he is starting a campaign to make a machine for pigs, just what you call a sequel now. So, you know, Call of Duty, a machine for pigs, etc. So I want to firmly put the level in support of that stance, you know, just because it's fun.
So after this podcast, I'm going to go buy Saints Row a machine of pigs.
Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about Windows 7, but what we actually mean is Windows, a machine for pigs.
Or, you know, I'm still pulling for, you know, Payday, a machine for pigs. That one actually sounds, that one's actually fairly appropriate.
Kind of.
But, so I know, title, the level, a machine for pigs.
There we go.
So if it has like a subtitle, do you say a machine for pigs and then the subtitle?
I think if it's
funny.
So you split the subtitle in two, and then you know, and then you
add
put
the Latin word for pigs in it.
So instead of being the Elder Scrolls Skyrim, it would be Elder Scrolls Sky, a machine for pigs rim.
I see. It's so obvious. How did I not think of it?
The grind. It's now time for the grind, where we talk about the video games that we're playing. Ben, what's so funny?
Nothing. Oh, okay. And everything.
Something.
I don't know.
Somebody laughed. Well, since you're so giddy, why don't you go first?
They call me Ben Giddy Merkel in my gang. I've only been playing one game, and I am promptly going to stop playing that game and promptly start playing Saints Row the Fourth after this podcast is over. I've been playing Dishonored. Ooh. Turns out we were all in the right for not playing it those months ago. I am not that impressed by it. Okay, so here's why I gripe about it. In my mind, I'm comparing it to Hitman, since they're both assassin simulators, in a sense. So here's
assassinators?
Yeah. I wouldn't use that in a public...
in polite company.
If I were running for office, I wouldn't use that term, but yeah, I like that now. Okay, so here's like what a typical mission is in Dishonored. Is, all right, you need to kill this person. So you go into the map, and it'll put up objectives, and it'll put up a filled-in white arrow for where the target is, and it'll put up a empty triangle arrow for where the non-lethal kill is, where you can go to figure out what the workaround is. Hitman has this too, but then you have to figure it out. You know, like you have to observe the environment. Mm-hmm. So literally a mission in this game is walking from arrow to arrow until the mission is over. There's like absolutely no thought. So perhaps if you turn it to a higher difficulty, it might be more interesting. So maybe I'll do that one day when I pick it back up again, if I do that. But but as I've played it now, it's just very uninteresting, I feel like, as far as a assassination sort of game goes.
Okay. So is it just that you feel that Hitman kind of has a more bespoke feel to it, that it's a bit more tightly crafted and they trust you more, or...?
I think it's just better designed. So, like, Hitman, it's more subtle. You have to put in more work if you want the non-lethal kill. But at the same time, if you get tired and frustrated, you can just go through a level and just blow everyone away. And that's an option. That's a legitimate
option. That's why I always did.
Yeah, and that's fine. You can do that. The thing is with Dishonored, if you do that, since they have the city mechanic, where the city will get quote-unquote darker the more you kill people, and not as bad if you don't kill people, that kind of takes away that option of just blowing through a level if you get frustrated. In addition, it seems to only work one way, where it's like if you kill people, it gets bad, and if you don't kill people, if you don't kill people, it just stays the same.
Right.
So it doesn't really feel like a rewarding system. There's not like a... there's not a sense of accomplishment or unlocking features. It's just you're staving off a bad result.
Couldn't you argue that it is the game trying to give you more of what you've been looking for?
What do you mean?
Oh, in terms of like, oh, this guy likes playing our game like a stabby slashy guy. So let's give him more stuff to stab and or slash.
Why do you say that?
Oh no, just if it's responding to what you do, it's giving you more of what you are doing, right? Whereas if you are stealthing, the game is saying, okay, let's give them the player a set of circumstances that are more conducive to stealth.
Okay, well, what's the reward if you are playing through stealth wise? If you want to make non lethal kills, it keeps something bad from happening, but it like that's. Like that's not a reward, you know. Like what's the difference? I learned this in an education class one time. The difference there's like punishment and reward, and there's positive and negative. Mm-hmm. It's like the difference between a negative punishment versus a positive reward or something like that.
Right.
Where they're just not giving you something bad. So
My understanding was, and you know, I've not played it all the way through. My understanding was that playing through stealthily, your reward was more story. And in general, like more of the kind of experience that you were, that you were playing towards.
That's the thing. It's like the experience is walking from era to era, though. It doesn't I think it's a shame, too, because some of the levels seem like they're well thought out, and they seem Hitman-esque as far as like creating an interesting dynamic environment. Mm-hmm. But then you don't get a chance to like even enjoy those because you're just walking to the next objective.
Right.
So, So perhaps I'll look some options to turn off the objective markers.
That seems like the kind of game where they would let you do that.
Yeah.
Like to turn off the waypoints.
Yeah.
I think, what was it in Mirror's Edge? Like the difficulty, like, you know, changing the difficulty, changed how quickly you ran or something, and then how much damage you could take, but also how much of the like critical path was highlighted, or there were like quicker or kind of like more exciting paths that were not highlighted but were still viable, but the easy one was painted red for you to kind of gravitate towards, right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that sounds cool if they did that.
It's weird. But that is a perfectly valid complaint, especially, you know, for someone like you who enjoys a stealth game.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting, too, is you can kill your friends at any given time. Mm-hmm. And, like, it'll even go through, like, a death animation when you do it, like the same one that you would do for an enemy. So I cannot count how many times I've reloaded the game just because I look at someone out of frustration and just stab them.
Now imagine that in Dark Souls, except you can't reload.
Yeah.
So, do you like the world, the kind of, you know, diesel punk, you know, industrial revolution, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mentioned this podcast or two ago. I wanted to ask you what the aesthetic was because I wasn't sure what kind of punk it would fall under. I think we came up with whale punk.
Yeah,
right?
I posited whale punk.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of difficult because, like, you know, kind of. Steampunk goes from like Victorian, usually goes from like Victorian to like the first half of the Industrial Revolution.
Where it would make sense that things have steam and cogs.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like it goes through the part of the Industrial Revolution where it's like everything's great, like industry, yay. Whereas diesel punk kind of is the second half of the Industrial Revolution through the World Wars, where it's like, oh, maybe like, you know, industry everywhere has some problems. And so I feel like Dishonored is kind of like right in between. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like right at the crossover where, you know, it has some elements of steampunk and some elements of diesel punk.
Maybe we could call it Melville punk.
Melville punk. I don't know. I'm kind of over punk as a suffix, to be honest. I was.
I mean, it's useful. It's useful in that, you know, it describes, you know, a number of, you know, fairly unique kind of aesthetics. I mean, it can definitely be overused, especially if, like, there's people that are very, very, like, I don't know, dogmatic about, like, exactly what it is and, you know, stuff like that.
Wait a minute, there are people on the internet who take something too seriously?
Okay, granted. I guess I did just, you know, spend like an hour writing a completely convoluted joke entirely to make a backhanded insult to Microsoft. So I guess I'm no.
I wasn't taking a shot at you. I was just.
Yeah, I realize. Yeah.
I do like the title Xbox Un, though. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. My tolerance for the punk thing was it was stretched today. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about this game called Sir, You Are Being Hunted. Tweed punk. I went on to their site. It looks like a really cool game. It's like a first person survival kind of thing, like stealth.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Is it like the most dangerous game? Because that's what I'm imagining.
Kind of, except the English gentlemen are robots.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. It looks real neat. I'm not quite certain I want to, you know, buy into the beta or whatever, but it looks cool. But they're touting it as like a tweed punk adventure or something like that, which is is not to be confused for Wilco's hardcore album, Tweedy Punk.
See, I think some of that, like, especially like that one, I would view as being kind of meant as a joke.
I'm sure. I just wanted to say Tweety Punk. I just wanted to make that joke. So
the world does need more tweed in it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, Wilco.
Wilco. So that's a bummer that you don't like it. I would encourage you to monkey around with the options, because I get the sense that it is because of the studio that it comes from, I get the sense that they're going to let you play with it.
Arcane.
Yeah, well, they're legacy with the Thief games and the Deus Ex and the Puddin' Pops. So.
Wait, really? They're the same people that made Deus Ex?
A bunch of their staff left wherever they were at. I think Looking Glass, and Looking Glass is made up of something or other. There's lineage. Oh. There's DNA.
That makes me sad.
Why?
Because Deus Ex was an amazing game, and Dishonored is crap.
Oh well.
Sorry, I not crap. It was just very disappointing.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later when more people have played it.
True.
Perhaps. So.
Huh. You guys mind if I go?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, I have three, one of which I cannot talk about very much. I'll do one here. So you guys have played Surgeon Simulator 2013, right? Or know of it, seen it?
Nope.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so Ben, have you heard of the game Quop?
No.
Quop. It's very similar in that. So in Quop, you are a runner, but you only have control over his left thigh, right.
Upper
leg, lower leg for left and right, and you have to press the buttons in a sequence and timing that makes it so he stays up. You're supposed to run 100 meters, but in reality, you're lucky if you get 1 meter. You know, just because you fall over. And the idea is that you take something that should be simple, in the case of Surgeon Simulator, picking up an object like a scalpel or a glass or something like that, and by breaking it down into overly complex gestures that you have to perform, like, you know, just making you think about the artifice of the way you're controlling it, actually making it super awkward and funny. So the idea...
Do you cut a lot of patients open then?
Well, yeah. So the idea is they give you three scenarios, at least at the start. I know they mix it up a little bit later. But the first one's like heart surgery. And so, you know, you have to lift up the sheet. And you have complete control. So it's like A, W, E, and R are your fingers. and your space bar is your thumb, and your mouse, you do various things like rotating your wrist and like bending your wrist and, you know, raising and lowering your hand. So you have that granular level of control. And
it seems
it seems like
open heart surgery is a dicey tutorial mission.
Then you go on to kidney, and then you go into brain surgery.
Oh man.
Yeah. But you have to like,
get them confused.
You have to saw open the rib cage, with like a bone saw. And you know, you have several options.
Bone saw.
That's where my mind went to.
Well, what's that from?
Spider-Man. Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
he lives on in Skyrim. But like you're like Bruce Willis in the pawn shop, like with the tools that they give you to do this. The best one is the actual, like, you know, like bone saw, the circular one where you have to go. But you also have like a hammer, an actual saw. You've got a drill for some reason. And if you cut or impact the wrong thing, you cause the patient to lose blood, and then you build up like a bleed number. So if you mess up enough, the patient will bleed out. So your performance is based on, you know, the time that you do it, but also how much like life bar the patient has left. And so I'm thinking, I'm getting into the chest, and I know that open heart surgery, you have to go down the middle in order to get it open. So I'm taking the hammer, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to ever so gingerly. Yep, nope, crap. He bleeds out by the time I bust open the entire rib cage. Turns out, like, you don't have any mind to, like, the preservation of the patient whatsoever. What you need to do is saw around the edges of the rib cage in order to lift the whole thing off and then, like, fling it onto the floor. And then you roughly remove the lungs and you fling those onto the floor because otherwise they stay in the way. And you have to make sure that you're not like dropping tools in, but it doesn't really fucking matter.
This is a 50-second rule.
Yeah. And then you're cutting up the esophagus. You don't have to do any kind of suturing back up. Obviously, that's not the case. That's not this kind of game, right? It's a joke. You know, it's like I didn't realize it at first. And then, you know. So I had like a thousand milliliters of blood left, and I was at like -30 drain or something. And I had the heart. I was like, okay, a scalpel. And I'm like hacking away. Well, hacking, we're like gingerly dragging the scalpel back and forth across the arteries. Pick up the heart, throw that on the ground, try and get my hand over. Oh my gosh, it's about to die. And I am opening up the box, like the cooler that has a heart in it. And I about knock the box off the table. And I'm like, oh no, I almost done it. I picked it up, and then I won this just by dropping the heart into the open chest cavity, like when they only had like 50 milliliters of blood left, so about a second or 2 seconds of time left. And I was like, you win, you did it.
So it's like a Stella surgery simulator then?
A what?
For the 50 people who have seen the show Stella.
Oh, yes, it is Stella surgery. Oh, man. You know, it was touch and go there for a moment. That's
dead.
A deep cut. Turns out it was Dr. Mengele. Oh, man.
It's a...
Good.
Oh, sorry, gone.
No, I was going to segue to something else. But please, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as a side note, for games that take like simple things and make them really, really complex... check out Receiver sometime.
Oh yeah, that's the one where you have to like clean your gun.
it's basically a roguelike shooter, but its big thing is you have to manually operate the gun. So like there's a button that is, you know, push, like if you want to reload, there's a button that's push magazine release. Mm-hmm. There's a button that's, you know, put in new magazine. Rack slide, take off safety, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's
it's basically like gun porn, except instead of doing the Borderlands approach of make everything completely crazy, it's kind of the other way. It's kind of the more the approach of like make everything ultra realistic. But anyways,
the final level is the climax of the first half of Full Metal Jacket. Yeah, that's
poor Pyle.
He went Section 8.
I was in a Kubrick exhibit in L.A., and these kids walked in. There's this room where it was talking about the sound of Kubrick films, and these kids walked into it right as Pyle blew off his head. And they're like, oh, did a 180 and left the room.
Oh, man. Sorry, I didn't mean to reference that. But yeah, you're right. I was only vaguely aware of that game, but that's an absolutely apt comparison. But yeah, apparently they embrace the goofiness. If you pick up a VHS and put it in a machine, you know, the tape player, like you play as the medic from Team Fortress 2 and you're cutting up the heavy. Yeah. So it's super cheap. I think it's like $5 on Steam. I got it for about $1 on the Steam sale. You know, I just wanted to play it around. I've never been more tempted to stream something, actually.
And you said this was Surgeon Simulator, right?
Yeah, Surgeon Simulator.
What do you mean stream something? Yeah. Like watch someone else play it?
Or? No. Like just like put up a stream and have people watch me play it and make fun of me for doing it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I don't know. If you're interested in that, let me know.
Watching you play?
Yeah, listeners. Listeners, if you're interested in that.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
I'm just interested in watching you at all times. So, yeah.
That's why I moved back to Cincinnati.
That's true. True dat. Yeah, well, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Let us see here what else is there. Took a little trip down memory lane because, again, I got it on the Steam sale. Played Ben There, Dan That, which is one of my favorite recent point-and-click adventure games. It's an indie game that was developed. It's the first game that came. It came before Time Gentlemen, Please. I spoke about it when we were talking about funny games. People were talking, asking us. Yeah. So it's super funny. It holds up. Last time I played it, I was like, it was like 2009 or something. Yeah, it's really funny. You play as these two kind of slacker guys. A super original premise. there's a lot of like game developer humor and stuff. You're trying to stop a plot. These aliens are attempting to take over the world by brainwashing people with a Match 3 game, which is super prescient, you know, because it came out in 2009. Nobody could have like guessed that Candy Crush Saga would be unleashed upon us. So we are actually living in their dystopian future. you're abducted by these aliens, and you have this big hallway, and each room in this hallway leads to an alternate dimension version of your apartment. And there are a bunch of different things. So there's one where like dinosaurs evolved instead of humans, and they're making games. And there's one where there's like the lava dimension and the ice dimension and things. And it's got this neat running gag or motif that most of the puzzles that you solve involve the main character, the guy that you're controlling. I forget if he's Ben or Dan. Like you control one of them, and the other one kind of follows you around as a sidekick, kind of like Sam and Max. So all of the puzzles or most of them involve you inadvertently killing somebody, and just as it goes on, your partner just keeps on commenting on the bloodlust and asking when it's going to end. Yeah, it's super goofy. I mean, it's not cerebral. It's smart, but it's not high humor or anything like that. And there's a place for that in this world. And, you know, as a 90-minute point and click adventure game, when there are nearly none of those, I think it's worthwhile.
How much is it?
I got it for like 50 cents on the Steam sale. It's like $5.
Too much.
Yeah, no. But I think it's $5 for the bundle of Ben There, Dan That, and Time Gentlemen, Please. So I'll probably go back and do Time Gentlemen, Please, because that is also short. As well. Yeah. Let's see here. Finally, I played over the weekend Gone Home, which is fantastic. So it's an indie-ass indie game. It's made by Sean Van... I always get these confused. Sean Vanneman of Idle Thumbs, or formerly of Idle Thumbs. He kind of broke off after developing a bunch of stuff for... I'm going to get this wrong. People are going to listen to this and tell me that I'm wrong. I think he worked on like Minerva's Den, the DLC for BioShock. And they went off and did this. So it's kind of an exploration and mystery solving game. And to say anything more about it aside from you are wandering around an empty house trying to figure out why it's empty kind of spoils it a little bit. So you're playing as a young woman who's returning from like a year abroad and expecting to see her family, but her family isn't there. And as you're kind of going around, you do all this kind of like archaeology and looking at, you know, clues inside this gigantic house to, you know, get a sense for like what has happened over this past year and where things are going. It presents itself as being super creepy. And that pays off in certain ways, but it's incredibly heartfelt, incredibly human. And I like it a lot.
What's it called again?
Gone Home.
Gone Home.
Yes.
It's like, so like one's home is gone.
You kind of are like, oh, where's he at? Oh, he's gone home. He went home. Something like that.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really good. It's you know, kind of expensive for indie games. I feel stupid saying that because $20 isn't a lot of money in general in the grand scheme of things. I think it's worth that. But I've seen and heard of people who were a little bit turned off by that. So,
how long does it take to play?
My play clock was like 3 hours, but I opened I think every drawer and picked up everything and looked it over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. You know, you can decide for yourself if you like that or not. We are arranging something. This may not come to pass, and, you know, just because things may happen. But there's going to be a bonus level orchestrated. It's going to be myself, Gary Butterfield, and then Zach Johnson from Video Games Hot Dog, and Bob Mackey from Retronauts doing a roundtable discussion about that. That'll be kind of released around the time that this episode is out. So if you're interested at all in that, if you played it, go check that out and... you know, you'll see it on the feed. Yeah.
Word.
Very well. David, how about you? What up?
What up? I actually picked up a game I think you guys waffled away a while back. I've been waffled?
You waffled.
I think I added some letters there. I feel like it should have an L. I'm just saying. I picked up Max Payne.
I've seen you playing that, actually.
Yeah, actually completed it a couple days ago. And I'm going to have to actually go back and listen to the WoW because I'm kind of interested to hear like what you guys took of it. You know, storyline's really, really good. You know, the I really love like the overwrought like film noir dialogue and the you know it does like halfway through or maybe a little more than halfway through it straight up becomes like Deus Ex, which is a little weird. And like the whole like random occult scene like that's a little weird.
That's one of my favorite moments in the game.
Which one? The occult thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I was trying to figure out like was that just like a 90s thing or something?
I think that
what, cults?
Yeah.
Well just like that like all these games are like, you know, just, you know, it's a game that is by all appearances kind more or less set in the real world. But then like halfway through, there's just this scene where it's like this random like, oh, well, this gangster's really into the occult. And I don't know, like he's like, you know, drinking people's blood and stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think that like that was around the time of the Matrix where everything just kind of naturally sprung up to have like a rave scene in it. This one did as well, you know, like.
And granted, like part of this was probably because like the game was meant to be to some degree, you know, kind of a reference or, you know, kind of, you know, directly draw from the Matrix to some degree.
They co-evolved.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, like I really like this storyline. It did strike me as kind of weird. I guess spoiler, but that you environmental kill the final boss.
Yeah, I think that it's preferable to just shooting the final boss in the face in some instance. But
yeah, I don't know. I felt in terms of mixed feelings. Like, I feel like it depends. If you're trying to make it just revenge, I think the most effective thing is just have you pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your point focus to it. But I assume that, yeah, that kind of their point was to not have it just be another boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was kind of interesting. But the gameplay itself, the game is incredibly, incredibly luck-based.
True.
In terms of, you know, what I think is, you know, the weapons are very inaccurate, but when they hit are very, you know, do a ton of damage. So you'll have, on the one hand, you'll have times where, like, you walk through a door and a guy immediately levels you with a shotgun. On the other hand, you'll have, like, situations where you'll, like, shoot a guy multiple times, you know, close range with a shotgun and not kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like, I felt like the gameplay didn't work that well overall.
Mm-hmm. It's our conclusion on Watch Out for Fireballs was that you will enjoy the game the most if you play it like a 3D Hotline Miami.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent way to say that.
Yeah. It's entirely about how do you approach every new room with the intention to clear it in a way that leaves you taking no or little damage.
Right, exactly. And this is the first game I've ever used quick saves on, and you basically have to.
Wait, you didn't use like quick save on like Half-Life?
No, I used real saves on Half-Life, but... Huh.
Anyway.
So, they had awesome menus.
Yeah. What did you think of the difficulty hump about two-thirds of the way through? Because, like, I eventually just had to, you know, use a little bit of the console commands, you know, to get through that.
It depends on what you mean. There are a couple of completely bullshit levels, most notably the stealth level. Mm-hmm. For the stealth level, I turned on God mode and beat down everyone with a baseball bat.
As you do.
Like, I know, like, there were a couple of points where I just, you know, said, you know, I don't care about this anymore, but I actually found, I don't know, like, what part in particular I'm wondering.
I mean, just like when you're, speaking of the Matrix, like when you're doing the final siege on the big corporate building.
Yeah, that area, I found it just seemed like a number of the encounters were very cheap. You know, most of them didn't strike me as exactly particularly hard. It just seemed like there are a number of them where it was impossible to get through them without taking excessive amounts of damage.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I a couple times just consoled myself in healing items.
Yeah, that's ultimately what I did. I like God mode makes it boring, but just the ability to get back to full between encounters just have to do that. And I don't know if that's because modern shooters have trained me to just always approach every new encounter as its own thing, and this persistence just kind of, you know, bugged me, but
Yeah, the parts I found that I felt were overtly bad were more the boss fights. You know, in particular, like the three assassins level is really, really bad. I know there's just a number of fights where it's basically, you know, any enemy in the game can kill you in about 2 to 3 seconds.
Right.
However, the bosses, you know, you can just unload like an entire clip of, you know, dual submachine guns and not kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just felt like that just fundamentally didn't work.
Right.
But yeah, the my big complaint, actually probably more than anything in terms of like difficulty increase, was near the end, particularly that level, all the enemies, their health increased, and that made it so, for example, like point blank shotgun blasts would no longer drop people. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much it bothered me that they had more health, so much as it bothered me that it made certain weapons no longer work.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. You end up with like 25 different types of each weapon, and then only, you know, shotguns end up being your friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the assault rifle too. But
yeah. Yeah. I ended up like, I think they did. This was the other thing with the quick save, is the weapons were very, end up being very, very situational. And so I almost would have to run into a room, see what's going to happen, and then reload and equip the right weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, because, like, I found, for example, the dual submachine guns I found to be the best weapon for, like, dealing with groups of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so I actually got, one of the Steam competitors has like a combo pack, so it's all three Max Payne games.
No.
So I've also played some of the third one, which it's really interesting seeing like a, you know, modern take on the game. So they've really you know, it's still it's still your health doesn't recover, but kind of the cool feature is if you get killed and you have a painkiller available, it'll use one of the painkillers up, send you into bullet time, and if you can kill the guy who killed you before bullet time ends, you'll be back to life.
That seems like a really good way to deal with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other thing I like that they added that is when you do like a dive, you'll then stay on the ground like shooting at people.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it much more useful. It's also, it kind of has the Uncharted like ultra like procedural animation. So like, as you're like shooting people on the ground, you'll kind of like roll over to, you know, shoot people behind you, and it's really well. Mm-hmm. They've really evolved it, so that's been interesting.
Yeah, Ben, have you ever played any of the Max Payne games?
I played the first one. I don't know if I played the second one. I definitely don't think I played it all the way through, but I might have played part of it, and I have not gotten Max Payne Rio de Janeiro edition.
Yeah, no, the painkiller seems like that seems like a really good way to deal with it. I don't know. I think they're cool. I think they're definitely interesting games. I just it's just weird how poorly the graphics have aged to me, and I don't normally get hung up on that, and it seems like a weird and incongruous thing to say, so I'll retract my statement now.
The face they chose for the character was a really bad idea.
Well, that's actually the guy. That's that is the creator of Max Payne and also the voice actor.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't mean like the face itself. I mean specifically the expression you have through the entirety of Max Payne.
Well, it looks like they screen printed a caricature of that guy onto some pantyhose and then stretched it over like a really weird guy's face.
Yeah. And you're like, you look basically constipated at all times.
Right. anything else, David?
That's been most of it.
Cool. I figured out something to do with trading cards on Steam, you guys.
What's that?
Sell them.
You can do that?
Okay.
Yeah, David, unplug and replug.
Ah.
Okay. No, you're.
Is it profitable?
No, it's not. I sell them. I think the most I sold one for was like a Gone Home trading card for about 30 cents. Right now, I'm looking at my balance. I've got about $1.85, but that's $1.85 that I didn't have before, I guess. I'm not interested in collecting them. So it's built into the interface that you can just sell them, right? Like you click on it, you see a little description of what it is. Sometimes you get a spoiler about a game you haven't played. And then you say, do you want to sell? Then they give you a graph of like what this has been selling for recently over the past like week or something like that. And it's kind of like, okay, I'll just look at what it sold for recently. I will put in exactly that amount. It marks it up to whatever fee is going to be there. You put it up and you just wait and see if somebody's going to buy it. And so I've got $1.85 that I didn't have before. And my idea is I want to see how long it takes for me to get enough money to buy papers, please.
How much is that?
$10.
All right.
But like, I'm playing a game, you know, I'm sitting down and playing Surgeon Simulator and I come out, I've got like after, 45 minutes of play, I've got 3 trading cards that I can put up and, get like 30 cents off of. And it's like, that's weird. So this is giving me trivial amounts of money for playing games because people are stupid enough to want all of these things.
Now, does like Steam take a cut of this at all?
Yeah. Steam does. And I think that the developers do as well.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. It's bewildering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get what the background is for the there's got to be some the only thing I've been able to find that they affect is, they affect your Steam level,
which
I guess, for the same people like that try to get like really high gamer scores maybe.
Okay. I've yet to hear something compelling.
I know. Okay. I'm just saying, like, that's...
Said
that's,
all of our listeners to this podcast.
Wait a minute. where's that coming from?
Just kidding. Okay. I like to be hard on the podcast. Sorry.
That's fine. Don't worry. I do, too. So we were joking earlier. I forget if this made it into the pre-roll or intro or whatnot, but, like... about how every day we're less and less relevant.
Yeah.
I think this is just another one of those things that not only is not for us, but is for an entirely different mindset of person that is like creeping up behind us with like a knife.
Oh, dude.
Like, I feel like I am set adrift on like an ice flow, like away from everybody else, and the flow is getting smaller and smaller as it melts, and I'm not sure where there is left to go.
Can you play Losing My Edge in the background during this part of the podcast?
No. Wait, so are you advocating that, like, who are you advocating is like the ominous they that are buying these things? Are they like casual gamers?
Maybe.
Soccer moms? Communists?
Like young people? People who have time and attention to care? I don't...
Cole, look into your heart. Do you not remember when we used to buy Pokemon cards?
Yeah,
and collect those?
We play a game with Pokemon cards, and I did.
Yeah. I just...
I will say, like, if they made this into a collectible card game, I would be all about that, because I am, a horrible person that way.
Like, was it on here where we were talking about doing like a triple triad kind of thing with Steam cards?
Yeah. Like something like that would be great.
What's a triple triad?
That was the card game in Final Fantasy VIII.
Oh,
yeah, which is fun. It's a really fun game. So yeah, no, I just wanted to say that I've got $1.85, for a minimal amount of work, I guess.
But you're losing your edge.
You guys want to button it up?
I want to go listen to LCD Sound System now.
Me too. I do too, Mr. Peppermint. Oh man, I'm looking. I can't. My heart can't stand it. I need to close this window because I've been looking at the Steam crawl for Saints Row four all day, all the time during this. It's breaking my heart.
Why is that?
So, this is actually something that's been bothering me. This is the first time where I've legitimately had, like, I could get on the PC or I could get on the PlayStation 3, and, you know, I would probably enjoy both of them equally. And it's really weird because the PS3 is, you know, is $10 more. So it's like, you want me to pay you $10 in order to play, in order to buy something from you?
Kind of. Yeah, that's a little, yeah. But it just feels it feels like a couch game to me, you know?
Well, I mean, I think most of the time it's not an issue because, like, usually there's not a lot of crossover between PC games and console games.
Yeah. So my inclination right now is to wait a couple of months for it to drop in price, for it to go on sale or something. But I just loved the third one so goddamn much that I kind of feel like this one can't be a miss. So
yeah, I mean, I know the reviews for it have been amazing. If you believe the Metacritics.
I don't have any time this week to play it. I've, like, literally every night is spoken for. Ugh.
I was going to say, Metacritic, it only has, like, an 86.
That's pretty good for Metacritic.
Last of Us has a 91.
That's like it's a 5-point spread.
Wait, 95, excuse me.
Yeah. Sorry. So we said we're going to button it up. Let's button it up.
Yeah, I guess so.
The credit. People are expecting admin, which I really don't want to do too much, so I'll just say go to duckfeed.tv/the level. You can find old episodes of the show, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. That is kind of the biggest way to help us. Check out other shows on the network, like our Facebook. It's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And then finally, if you want to support the network, you're going to be doing any Amazon shopping around this back to school time. If you're going to be buying any textbooks, go onto our Amazon link there. First, then add stuff to your cart and buy it. We get a cut of whatever you buy. You don't get to, you know, you're not charged anything extra. If you're interested in Gone Home, if you've played it, or if you were tantalized by my vague description of it, first play it, and then we're going to be doing a bonus level with some cool people, cool people. about it here. So yeah, did I miss anything, guys?
Are they cool?
They're cool.
Oh,
okay. Short episode, but that's because I'm tired. Sorry.
Sorry.
So yeah, outros and Twitters. My name is Cole Ross. I'm at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith. I'm at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
And I'm Ben at Merkleizer on Twitter.
See,
one of these times I'm not going to give my Twitter. I'm going to give, like, my LinkedIn or something.
Yeah.
Yes, because you love email spam. Oh, man, seriously. Don't use LinkedIn and good night.
Wait, it's a baklava? Isn't that weird mask thing that, like, terrorists wear?
It's a balaclava.
They're basically the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
A balaclava made of baklava.
Oh my god, that sounds delicious.
It's a disguise and a snack.